The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Welcome all to Football Weekly. In today's bulletin from Near Earth Orbit, another weekend in the Premier League, another hasty rethink of our opinions. Man City aren't as hopeless as we thought, neither gasp are Stoke. Good thing there's always Tottenham to crumble exactly the way you expect them to. We look back on the weekend's games and the latest transfer talk and applaud Spurs' handling of the Berbatov affair, every bit as smooth as an Olympic relay handover. Elsewhere, there's Super Cups in Italy and Spain, gold for Argentina in Beijing, posts and anything else that comes up. Hello, everybody. Well, it's a special bank holiday edition of Pod today, and I must welcome Barry Glendenning.
Hello, James.
Fernando Duarte.
Hello, James. How are
you? Season debut. I'm very well. Good to have you back, Fernando.
Oh, it's always good to be back.
And joining us, very much a last-minute addition to the squad, Richard Aikman. Richard, many, many thanks.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm very well. You've got no idea what we're talking about today, do you?
No, but so you should no change right there.
Yeah. You saw where that one was going, didn't you? Hey, who caught the closing ceremony in Beijing? David Beckham.
Yes.
He wants to coach Team GB in 2012. That could happen, couldn't it?
So I would imagine the Scots might have very little truck with a Team
GB.
They
might have very little input into a Team GB.
Well, exactly. Harry Redknapp has also voiced...
And Sir Alex. I think Seb Coe's Lord Coe has spoken to Sir Alex about this.
Well, I might as well throw my hat in the ring. I too would coach
You're
Team
You're from
GB.
Ireland, Barry. That's not part of GB.
I can
for
still
several
coach the team, though.
That is true, yeah. Richard, Team GB, yay, nay?
I think it's a brilliant idea, actually. I'd like to see Harry Redknapp managing the side, though, just to add that extra comedy value in the interview process.
Right. Fernando, would you like, as a Brazilian, would you like to see...
If Team GB does not line up for 2012, that's the way you kind of end up killing Olympic football. Why the hell hosting the tournament, if not even the hosts actually directly involved
you,
in
You
that?
Just want to get rid of the Olympic tournament because it's the only thing Brazil never win.
No, actually, I would love us to win it, you know, as long as we can be seated three groups away from Argentina and something has to happen because it seems, you know, we're cursed on that.
Right, yeah. Fernando's still reeling from last week's semi-final defeat to neighbours Argentina. We're talking more about that perhaps
We will.
A bit later on. But right now, on to the weekend's games. Now, Man United yet to play as we join you here in the pod. They're going to be taking on Portsmouth tonight. What do you think is going to happen, Barry?
I think Manchester United are going to beat them very easily.
Really? Okay. Richard?
I think it's going to be a draw, actually. United haven't quite got going yet, and without Ronaldo, they're not quite the same.
Although Tevez is back from his family problems last week that forced him to be out, I believe. I'm just worried a little bit about Harry Redknapp. The way he laid into Capello and Capello's England team last week, you just feel there's a little bit of, a hubris?
Schadenfreude.
That's the one. But anyway, he was talking about...
Oh, no, it isn't, is it?
The worst performance he'd seen from a team, and I was thinking since your lot against Chelsea the weekend
Where
before.
Where I come from, we call that sour grapes, but okay.
Sour grapes. Well, it's something like that. Anyway, now, well, that's Man United. In the meantime, yet again, one of the big four has dropped points, and this time it was Arsenal, who got taken apart by a very smart-looking Fulham team. Barry, you and I watched this game.
We did. Fulham were well worth their win. Arsenal were unbelievably poor. Fulham went about their business with great aplomb. It wasn't a huge shock, but you know, at the end of the game, that Arsenal couldn't get back into it.
Richard, you're frowning.
Oh, I was just frowning, just remembering how badly Arsenal played. I haven't seen them play that badly for a very, very long time. It was kind of a throwback to the grim old George Graham years in many ways. And when Emmanuel Eboué is the best player on the side, then you've got to have worries.
I read Duncan Castle's report of the match, and he said something really interesting about the religion Arsenal's becoming, with the kind of like mantra that we play the best football, if we just keep knocking the ball around, we're going to win, etc. Doesn't seem to be convincing some of the former religious leaders. I saw Lee Dixon at Match of the Day yesterday. He was fuming. The guy, the host, I don't remember his name, have to cut him down because he was just lashing into the entire Wenger revolution or
but
something like that.
Wasn't the problem on Saturday that Arsenal weren't passing the ball around? If anybody was doing that, it was actually Fulham, who were moving it around very neatly.
They were giving the ball away so often. It was very un-Arsenal-like, the way they just ceded possession. Not only that, in the past, Arsenal, even without the ball, are very good at pressing players, but they were actually outpressed by Fulham, which was part of their downfall as well.
Mm. Do you think it was just a bad day at the office, or does it look like it could be an ongoing problem for them?
Well, it'll be an ongoing problem if Fabregas continues to have injury problems. I think if Fabregas comes back, then it won't be a problem, but clearly Arsenal are over-dependent on on the young Spaniard now, particularly now that Flamini and Hleb have gone and they haven't really been replaced.
Chuck Schick, who reckons that Chelsea are bigger long ball specialists than Bolton, says unlucky to those plucky gooners. Ah, well, there's always next season. What's the French, asked Chuck Schick, for deja vu? It's interesting, actually, because it is only the second game of the season. You think, well, these things can happen. But Wenger seemed to be quite despondent after the game, didn't he? Seemed to be almost writing off their chances or admitting that there were serious problems going on there.
Well, Wenger's normally got an excuse in post-match interviews, but he actually didn't have one for once. He said, you know, I don't like to make excuses because there were international games well in the week. And often he says that the players aren't quite what they should be after an international game. They're not really on top of their game. But actually this time he said, I can't make any excuses. We're giving the ball away a lot. And we were just second best, which is very worrying.
Now, on top of the table on maximum points are Chelsea and Liverpool, who both had very narrow wins. Chelsea with a Deco free kick, earning them the 3 points at a decent Wigan side. Liverpool, meanwhile, Steven Gerrard, Fernando, you no doubt saw this game, top Liverpool fan that you are.
Yeah, I did. And
Would you like to apologise to Borough fans everywhere?
But no.
No?
Okay. No, come on. That's what annoy people. Sorry, I mean, I'm being a bit of a brat now. Basically, the second or third time they come to Anfield and they cause Liverpool big problems, it's amazing. I mean, Liverpool's a side that should be imposing themselves against whatever the mid-table rivals, but you know, fair play to them. They took it there. We're really unlucky not to get a point, to be honest. Southgate was absolutely right in feeling a bit let down, you know, a bit robbed, and at the end.
Well, Gerrard's winning goal, 94th minute. I mean, credit to him. You know, he never gives up, etc., etc., etc. But a bit of a kick in the teeth for Borough. Looking at that performance, you got a big game coming up midweek against Standard Liège, and it was 0-0 in the first leg. So you didn't get an away goal in the first leg of that. Do you, looking at that performance, have any reasons to be optimistic about this week's game?
I remember that in 2005 they scraped a result against Rapid Vienna, wasn't that? They had a bad result and ended up winning the Champions League. So it's quite difficult to actually start inferring now, but it seems amazing how the team can't click. You know, the way they should be, like, the game should be flowing a bit more. And Liverpool, they've got this kind of stuckness. Okay, they might scrape another good Champions League thing, make another semi-final. But still, you look at the squad and you get kind of puzzled. Why is it not working? Why can't they look a bit more imposing, like Chelsea did in the first game? And not yesterday, by the way. Wigan were really unlucky, to be honest.
The conventional answer is they don't have enough width.
I didn't see this game. How did Robbie Keane play? Or how does it look to be shaping up between himself and Fernando Torres?
You're looking at me, why?
I'm sorry, James, I forgot. I mistook you for someone who takes an interest in football.
No, I do take an interest, but
they didn't seem to be clashing heads like in the first game. Yeah. The first game was almost like Keystone Coppers thing, wasn't it? When they almost collided in one of the chances there. But in its time, of course, they brought new players, etc. I just feel really spooked. I mean, like, as if somebody, you know, buried a frog behind one of the goals at Anfield. That's what we say in Brazil when a team has got for a really dry spell in a competition.
Someone's buried a frog there.
Yeah, a frog, yeah.
So, does that work?
Well, apparently it does, anyway.
Oh, okay. I mean, what do you do if somebody's buried a frog behind your goal? What is the conventional?
You have to try to frog, to find the frog's skeleton.
And dig it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the answer then. Hurry up with building that new ground. There might be a frog buried somewhere at Anfield. My word. Okay. Elsewhere, last weekend Villa looked like top four contenders and Stoke dead certs to go down. But this week the two teams face each other and Stoke turn over Martin O'Neill's boys. This was a bit of a shock, wasn't it? It was. How about those throw-ins from Rory Delap, eh?
Well, I can bring him to England now, yeah? You got a player who only crosses a ball?
Yes.
Called David Beckham. Now you can bring a guy just to take the throw-ins as well. That's how, you know, specific football's becoming. I'm sure that Capello is writing down something.
That is a very effective tactic, isn't it?
Is he English, by the way, Delap? Sorry, Ben.
He's Irish, actually.
Is he? Oh,
well, he's born in England, but he played for Ireland.
Oops, Trapattoni so should be paying attention, though, especially for Ireland.
Jeez. Well, I tell you what, it worked for Stoke, didn't it?
Well, I mean, those throw-ins, they are as effective as corners. And Stoke have, I think, 8 of their team, or 8 of the 11 that played on Saturday are over 6 foot. So if you've got, you know, artillery like that coming in and they can get on the end of it, as showed on Saturday, it works, and it worked for them. They got the result.
No, they certainly did, and a fine win it was too. Another surprise, Man City bouncing back from what's been a disastrous start to the season with a 3-0 victory over West Ham, who were down to 10 men.
And how stupid was that guy to be sent off? What did he expect? He tried to chop the guy in half in the second bookable offence. and still wanted to speak to the referee and complain. Lucas Neal was all there. When a footballer's gonna just like go get on with the game and say, listen, stupid, he tried to break the player, yellow card. It was supposed to be a straight red, in my opinion.
I didn't think it was that bad, but the first booking was ridiculous altogether. Like,
just, he tried to ruck it out.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I presume his chat with the referee, they were just discussing the finer points of the FA's new respect initiative.
Yeah, which got John Terry as one of the, you know, head spokesperson.
That's because Joey Barton wasn't available. Yeah. Apparently. I think he had some other commitments.
And that Cuban guy from Taekwondo wasn't available as well. Yeah.
Now, listen, Man City, though, hey, have they turned the corner at this point? Are they going to rescue their UEFA chances against Michelin midweek? Are they going to bounce back in the league?
I would subscribe to the view that it was just West Ham being absolutely terrible. Interestingly, Stephen Ireland played very, very well yesterday. He was possibly man of the
hasn't
match.
Hasn't he looked better in a kind of reverse of the whole kind of Samson and I thing? Since he shaved his head, hasn't he been better?
Well, did he shave his head or did he just remove his
Comedy toupee,
right. and forget to put it on. There was, interestingly, talk that the reason, and I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently the reason he won't play for the Republic of Ireland is because he got such a, if you'll pardon the expression, wigging over his comedy toupee from the other players. I wouldn't rule it out. It sounds plausible enough.
I retire internationally because people were mocking my hairstyle. Well, no, Come on.
I think the feeling is, Fernando, and you have a full head of hair, so you can't begin to imagine the psychological pain turning up for international games. Going into a football locker room, which I imagine must be a fairly boisterous kind of place, plenty of alpha male rutting and that kind of thing.
Rotting?
Yeah, you know, when the stags...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, who knows, eh? That's the version I was thinking of. But anyway, and I can imagine that there was all sorts of unpleasantness.
Ireland did get bullied quite seriously, which I'd imagine is no fun. And,
right.
You know, why would you bother going back?
Exactly. I'm with you, Barry.
I was at a Nick Cave gig a few months ago, and I remember looking at Nick Cave and thinking... You're bald, Nick.
Yeah.
Give it off. Get the razor.
Yeah, I think there is a moment where you have to go,
what about Paul Rogers, who was bald, and then when he did that horrible head transplant thing, he decided to release all the free albums again with, like, doctor pictures in which, instead of showing the...
You're joking. Better,
yeah, he's got hair. The thing is, I've got the old albums, Mr. Rogers. I've seen you bald before. Don't try to fool people, yeah?
You're saying that Paul Rogers, out of free, and then latterly with Queen, I believe.
Yes.
He re-released old albums with doctored artwork.
Yes.
That's shocking.
I can prove that. I've got the albums. They're in Brazil, so it might take a while
for me to do that. Never figured you for a free fan. You know, when you were growing up in Brazil, all the music you could have been listening to.
Stood on the street.
Yeah, okay. right then, because there wasn't much decent music to listen to in Brazil when you were growing up.
Free is great, man.
Okay. You know, we're running away with ourselves a little bit here, but just to quickly round up the rest of the weekend, Newcastle beat Bolton, Michael Owen with a header. Everton beat West Brom.
I noticed one of our listeners, I think it's Seagull Java, who's a Newcastle fan. Was on the blog.
Great nickname,
asking
by the way.
Me who's the top team in the Northeast.
Yes.
Which is sort of like asking who's the tallest pygmy in the village.
But right.
Little victories for the Newcastle fans.
Well, there you go.
Subject of hairstyles, Colicchini, or Colicchini, however you pronounce it, he's got a fantastic bonnet, hasn't he?
Yes.
You
know, it's quite Keegan-esque.
It is.
It looks like Tarantino, who used to play for Argentina when they won the World Cup in 78.
What is it with Argentinians and bad haircuts?
Well, Argentines do have phenomenal haircuts. Producer Ian is suggesting that Thaksin Shinawatra should somehow enter into this category of really bad hair. But, I mean, he's a Thai dictator, don't they always have kind of...
I think their hair is the smallest of the problems in that block, to be honest. I mean.
Right. Okay. Spurs lost again at home to Sunderland. My word. Who wants to talk about this? Richard, go on then, as a gunner.
Well, I mean, as a gunner, I suppose I can at least take some sort of small comfort in the fact that
Tottenham... I think
we
established the word is schadenfreude.
Well, yeah. The poor Spurs, really, they had a great pre-season and they had a great strike force pre-season, and suddenly they've just got Darren Bent. They've got to get somebody in, but they've only got a week to do it in. So it's got to be a source of great concern. I don't think they actually played that badly at the weekend, but without Berbatov and Keane, they're just completely toothless up front.
Well, indeed. We'll come on to Berbatov in a second, but I remember when Wanyama signed up, there was all sorts of talk about a treasure chest and money he could... spend and bringing his kind of players in, etc. But has that all completely changed? Has Enic kind of got hit by the credit crunch? How come they've just sold off their big strike partnership from last year without replacing them? Well, they haven't sold off Berbatov yet, but that seems to be now.
I mean, I'd have taken $20 million for Robbie Keane, to be honest. But it's only worth taking it if you can then bring in the replacements. And that's got to be a concern. I'm assuming they're working on bringing someone in. you know, someone like Milito or the Russian guys that's been touted, not Arshavin.
Pavlyuchenko.
Pavlyuchenko, that's right. So I expect they will bring someone in, but if they don't, they're in deep trouble.
Well, Berbatov, then, why is it that Man United were able to handle so well the whole issue of Ronaldo going to Real Madrid and effectively make sure that he didn't? And make him understand that there was no point in pushing it any further. But Spurs, instead, seem completely impotent. He says, I want to go. They leave him out of the side completely for this weekend, saying that he's not in the right frame of mind, which is effectively conceding defeat to whoever wants to buy him, I mean, Man United. And this despite the fact that he scored two goals for Bulgaria midweek.
I don't think they got leverage to actually convince him to stay.
Well, how come Man United had leverage over Ronaldo?
Because they are United, they just won the Champions League, and the league, they can tell Ronaldo, you stay here, you know, it's not going to be a huge problem for you if you don't go to Madrid this season. While for Berbatov's aspirations, another year in Spurs, with no disrespect to Tottenham fans, who I really admire, etc., it is different. They're not playing Champions League football. They definitely did not seem able to break the top five last season. So he's kind of like, you know, isolated from the glory level in terms of football. So I understand why Spurs should struggle to do that. But then again, the handling doesn't seem to be quite smooth.
If you're going to get rid of him, which is now the case, why not do it 2 or 3 weeks ago so that you'd have time to actually go and look for a replacement?
Well, you'd imagine the wheels are already in motion about teeing up a replacement. There are people linked with Spurs every day. Diego Forlan was the latest. I suspect Cristiano Ronaldo staying at United. Sir Alex Ferguson is a lot more fearsome than Juan de Ramos. His threat that he, you know, would have Cristiano Ronaldo playing in the reserves, if that's what it took, you know, you kind of get the impression that he would go that far, whereas anything coming out of Juan de Ramos's mouth pale into insignificance.
I think their game plan was also to get Arshavin, and then that all went pear-shaped because they realised how badly they wanted him and they were asking too much for it.
Right.
So Tottenham said that they wouldn't do that. But I think Tottenham's almost their business model is to try and get young players in and then sell them on for a profit. That seems to be what Enoch are all about. So that's why they're happy to get rid of Keane, and that's probably why they'll sell Berbatov as well.
Right.
But it'll backfire.
One thing on Juan de Ramos and what kind of moral high ground he would have for keeping Berbatov back, as indeed one paper pointed out, he himself walked out on a club in the middle of their campaign just last season.
There seems to be some debate over whether Berbatov wasn't picked or just refused to play. Roy Keane said after the game that if he had a player who didn't want to play for him, he'd just get in the car and drive him wherever he wanted to go. So
it's very kind of him.
It is.
Yeah, he's a kind man, though, Roy Keane.
He's a kind man.
And well done to Sunderland. Fantastic. So have Richardson and Cissé scored.
Yeah, Cissé scored in his debut, and El Hadji Diouf was man of the match. Bodes well for the rest of the season.
Unlike the fact that they might be signing Anton Ferdinand.
I suspect they won't, though, because Ferdinand seems to be hell-bent on not leaving London. So,
okay. That's probably enough on the weekend in the Premier League. So hang about, and in a couple of seconds' time, we'll be addressing the game worldwide. Now, joining us on the line from his back garden somewhere in Madrid is Sid Lowe. Sid.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
It's been a while since we've spoken. Of course, the Spanish season not yet underway, although Sunday night we did have the Spanish Super Cup, and that was Valencia against Real Madrid. And what happened?
It was brilliant, actually. A really, really good game. Valencia won, Real Madrid down to just 9 men, but came back to win 4-2. And Aaron Robben was absolutely brilliant. Probably imagine everyone in Madrid's getting quite excited at the possibility that, hang on a minute, if this guy can stay fit, he really could be the great player they told us he was going to be. You had Ruud van Nistelrooy and Rafael van der Vaart both sent off. Van der Vaart got a straight red for a pretty bad challenge, knee high in, but I think kind of challenge that you wouldn't have complained too much if it had only been yellow. And van Nistelrooy got two yellow cards again. Both of them probably were, but you felt a little sorry for him because considering some of the challenges that were going in, for van Nistelrooy to get booked on both of his bad ones was perhaps a little unlucky.
Now, Real Madrid, of course, been in the news plenty of late for the on-off story of Robinho going to Chelsea. What's the latest on that, Sid?
Well, at the moment, basically what's happening is that Real Madrid are trying to get as much money as they possibly can out of Chelsea, and also doing a very good job at the moment of trying to make sure everybody knows that this is Robinho's fault. Now, in some ways, this story kind of refuses to move on, in that what's been waiting all the time to really make this happen is Real Madrid to allow themselves to give in and say, OK, we'll sell. Obviously, that's why Robinho came out and spoke out on Friday and said he wanted to go publicly, because he wanted to force Real Madrid's hand a little bit, try and make sure that it actually went through. of course, basically Robinho doing what Real Madrid always wanted Cristiano Ronaldo to do, but Ronaldo never quite did, which is go absolutely unequivocally with a public statement of intent. The problem is that Robinho, all the way through this, has felt badly treated by Real Madrid. Now, obviously, you can argue about whether or not he is, but he's going to be offered something close to €6 million a year after tax by Chelsea. He's currently on 2.1 at Real Madrid, which he thinks isn't enough, not least because it makes him only, I think, the eighth best paid player in the squad behind people like Royston Drenthe, who never play. Also, he feels badly treated because he thinks that Real Madrid wanted to sell him to finance a deal for Cristiano Ronaldo, which is exactly what they did want to do. And it was only once they realised they missed out on Ronaldo, they suddenly said, hang on a minute, Robinho, do you fancy staying? And I think he wasn't very happy about that. The problem is that Real Madrid, when they realised that they weren't getting Cristiano Ronaldo, then tried to stop Robinho going. One of the ways of doing it, of course, was to offer him a new contract, which still wasn't high enough, by which time Robinho had decided, well, tough luck anyway. And on top of that, the other thing they did, they kept saying to him, you know, Chelsea don't really want you, mate. If they really wanted you, they'd offer proper money, not the pittance they're offering at the moment. And what they said to Robinho then was, tell you what, if they offer €40 million, you can go. Trouble is, Robinho didn't believe them, and the trouble is as well that Real Madrid didn't believe Chelsea would offer that. Now, Chelsea aren't at the moment at €40 million, but they're getting close. And so Madrid's bluff may be called to some extent, except, of course, that Madrid have publicly said, if a player wants to go, we won't stop him, but it's up to him to unilaterally break his contract, which is a hint of them basically saying to Robinho, you have to pay your buyout clause if you want to go, which is €150 million.
Wow. And how big a hole would he leave in their side?
His departure would leave them with quite a short squad. And if there were to be a couple of injuries, then they could perhaps suffer for it. And I think they will try and buy again if and when Robinho goes. In fact, that's one of the key sticking points at the moment. Chelsea believe that Real Madrid are digging their heels in on Robinho because they don't want to sell him until they know they've got someone to replace him lined up. Not least, of course, because of the kind of impact that it will have on the fans to miss out on Ronaldo and then lose Robinho.
And who might they have lined up, do you think, Sid?
There's two or three different options at the moment. The thing is, they're not exactly Robinho players. They're talking about a couple of strikers, Klaus-Jan Huntelaar from Ajax. They're talking about Diego Melito from Real Zaragoza, who earlier in the summer looked like he might be going to Spurs. That now, I guess, isn't going to happen, although, of course, Berbatov's departure could have an influence on that. And then the other one they're talking about is Diego Capel, the left-winger from Sevilla, because his buyout clause is low. His buyout clause is only €15 million.
Sid, Fernando here. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, I'm fine. Just curious about this Raul thing. Talking to players, Brazilian players that have been in Real Madrid already, they always said that he was a bit of like the little prince around there. Mm. And somehow, that was kind of like not only creating problems for the foreigners, but also hampering Madrid a bit. Do you think that Raul perhaps is jumping the shark too much?
The thing that happens with Raul is, I mean, that description basically fits exactly with what a lot of the Brazilians have said. Not just the Brazilians, actually, some of the other players at Real Madrid. But Raul is a guy who, particularly since he's been captain, but even before then to some extent, takes on the responsibility for Real Madrid to such an enormous degree, but that he sees Real Madrid entirely in his image. So when Real Madrid drifts one way that he doesn't like, as was the case under the Brazilian manager, that he tries to kind of put it back, and that does cause problems for other players. There is also a feeling amongst some people at Real Madrid that Raul has been guaranteed a place in the side for too long, even when he hasn't played well. And certainly I think there was a couple of years when that was true. It is actually problematic for Madrid in purely footballing terms, definitely.
Anything else, Sid, ahead of the start of the Spanish season this weekend?
Two or three big things. I mean, the first one really is Atletico Madrid on Wednesday. They've got to make sure they don't blow their return to the Champions League, back in the Champions League first time in 11 years, I think it is. And they could well go out because they're goal down against Schalke from the first leg. But Kun Aguero is back to save them, even though he's been banging on about how he's not the saviour. Of course, you've got the fact that Joan Laporta scraped through the members' assembly vote, which everyone expected him to do. So it looks like he's still in power for a little while at Barcelona, something which looked almost possible not so very long ago. And apart from that, it's just waiting for the new season to start this weekend with the typical false start in Spain, which is always so frustrating, of having 1 week and then an international week. So the season sort of half starts and it has to start again 2 weeks later.
Brilliant. OK, Sid, thank you very much for that. We look forward to speaking to you soon then.
Good stuff. Cheers.
MGCB in Brussels invites everyone to join our Sid Lowe Facebook group and show your support for your favourite Spanish-based footy journalist. There's plenty of Football Weekly love on Facebook, isn't there, Barry? How's your group doing?
I don't know.
You don't care, do you?
Is there a Facebook Stalking Association or something like that?
No, it's just...
There's a lot of Football Weekly Facebook weirdness. Hey. I don't have my own Facebook account.
But you have an appreciation society.
I am aware of that, yes.
I have a depreciation society in Brazil, you know that?
Depreciation?
Yeah, the Mariah Carey fans actually found at a depreciation society.
For you?
Yeah, for me.
What did you say?
Yeah, because, you know, Live 8 in 2005,
yes.
I told her that the best thing she did was help people sell hot dogs and water because everybody went off the stage when she started singing.
You said that to her?
Yeah, in January when I was reviewing the concert, because I think she's a fraud, basically, and the fans there, they threatened me.
Okay.
Apparently she also employs two people to towel her down when she goes swimming in the sea.
Poof. I'd like that job, eh, Richard? Know what I mean?
Fnarr.
Just back Lost Marar is a regular listener.
Back to the Knots magazine football weekly podcast.
Okay, now other posts. Peckham Lightning wants to know, are we running a football weekly league for that magnificent fantasy football thing? We are. The league name is Football Weekly, two different words. And the password is Pod Almighty, just one word, just one L in Almighty, listeners. Uncle Tupelo says, let's be honest here, there is no one in the England squad that would make a World 11. If you accept that, then last night's result, the last Euro campaign, and everything Sven did is perfectly acceptable, a mediocre performance by a mediocre nation. Why is that hard for people to accept? I'm not sure if no one would get into a World 11. I think Steven Gerrard might do, actually.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. Timbot says, good to hear Sean's report from the Olympics in Beijing. Timbot here on the subject of Sean at the Olympics. Good to hear, says Timbot, Sean's report from the Olympics in Beijing. Was wondering whether he used his visit as an opportunity for getting his own back for Germany 06. Did he bite into any dog whilst there? Excellent stuff there. Barry, you weren't impressed by that one.
Isn't Korea the dogs?
I think they eat everything in China as well. China, like scorpions on a stick or something like that.
Scorpions.
You know?
The German rock group or the...
No, thank goodness. Next we'll be hearing Fernando reckons scorpions aren't any good. Wind of change? They brought the wall down, Fernando.
I think David Hasselhoff did that, but anyway.
Did he? How did he do that?
Well, by being a successful singer,
I see.
Yeah.
So the East Germans demanded to be part of this exciting Western
because of
culture.
The Hoff, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a perspective on history that I hadn't come across before.
We expect an amount of comments from Germans now in the podcast.
No,
we're going to be lambasted by
it's
them.
It's interesting worldview you got there culturally. We've got Free Tick, Hasselhoff Tick, Mariah Carey Cross. My word. Shevchenko.
Cross.
Cross. He was going back, then he wasn't going back, and then he was going back. Wonk says, Glenn Denning's comment that Shevchenko should be employed by Lambeth Council, at last proof positive that Barry knows nothing about football. He's a striker, not a sweeper.
Very good.
And Shev has now gone back. He touched down in Milan, I think it was yesterday, and was met by literally tens of fans. 9 years on from his first arrival. I think it's all a bit underwhelming, really. And I think also that the manager, Ancelotti, must be absolutely fed up with the whole thing because whilst he is second highest scorer in Milan's history, seven seasons there, 173 goals, he is now at almost 32, demonstrably past it. I mean, maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I really don't think so. And there's a very real fear in Milan that he's going to take away space from a younger player. Ancelotti likes to play with one up front. If it's Shevchenko, that means that Pato, this young Brazilian they're so excited about, is not going to get a regular starting role. Or Borriello, who scored 19 goals in Serie A last year. And there's no way Shev's going to do that. Meanwhile, at the back, where Milan urgently need to bring in somebody, they're still no closer to making a signing, having been blown out over Ivanovic, which is hardly the world-class player you'd expect them to be bringing in. They're now chasing Filip Senderos. Again, it's not the kind of signing that you'd think of Milan making, and you can understand why Milan fans, after 20 glorious years under Berlusconi, last season began to put up banners at the San Siro urging the Italian Prime Minister to move on and let somebody else have a pop with their club.
I think Galliani is certainly responsible for a lot of these very strange acquisitions, such as Ronaldinho and now Shevchenko. Both of them arguably are past it, and they're not really looking to the future of the club, and particularly if they sell Kaká, Milan fans are, I'm sure, going to be up in arms if that happens.
Yeah, well, this Kaká thing, as we mentioned last week, potentially there might be some sort of option for Chelsea involved in the move for Shevchenko. They're allowing him to go in return for first dibs next year, in which case that would be an even more stupid decision, bringing Shevchenko back, in my opinion, than it already seems to be.
I have the impression that the younger guys in Milan,
yes,
like Kaká and the important guys are starting to get a bit frustrated with the club, even in terms of body language, etc. And how much more grief do Milan need? No Champions League this season. They had a horrible season last year. So what more do they need to do to actually,
On the subject of Italy, we had the Italian Super Cup yesterday. Inter, who were facing Roma, the third consecutive year that these two teams have faced off for the Super Cup. Inter as champions, Roma as winners of the Italian Cup. And it was Inter who won a dramatic victory on penalties after extra time. Inter took the lead twice through Sulli Montari and then a good goal from Balotelli, that young 18-year-old chap who's looking so good for them. De Rossi and Vucinic, the scorers for Roma. Totti missed his penalty. He came on as a sub. And Zanetti then, his opposite number as captain, won it for Inter. Italian League starts this coming weekend. That, I think, is pretty much it, except for the fact that when we mentioned Sean Ingle at the Olympics, we never followed up on that whole business of the Olympic final, which, Fernando, you watched. You got up in the middle of the night to watch this. Argentina-Nigeria.
I actually watched on the BBC Digital, so I don't think I was watching the live feed.
Right, okay.
It wasn't that late, but I watched the game.
Yeah.
Fair play to Argentina.
Yes.
You know, won it when it mattered. I mean, the Nigerians had chances as well, but Argentina was always, they were always in control the entire tournament. What they did to Brazil in the semifinals was amazing. They just, you know, played them off the park. I also think Dunga was a bit to blame for playing a bit cowardly, putting Brazil on the back foot all the time, which basically undermined a lot his chances of actually staying in the tournament. Winning this elusive gold was something that could save his career. Now he's got to do fantastically in the qualifiers for the World Cup, and he got Chile away on the 7th of September.
Well, Sean Inger was mentioning the fact that Globo, your paper, printed a full-page obituary for Dunga after they went out against Argentina. The situation in the qualifiers is...
We're on fifth place.
Which means that at present you'd be heading into a playoff with the Oceania group, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I think the difference between us and Paraguay and at the top is like 4 points. It's not a tragedy. It's just the fact that people are pissed off of the way the team is playing.
Right.
You know, losing games is part of the job. But the way Brazil played against Paraguay, for example, the lackluster performance against Argentina in the qualifiers and in the Olympics, people are starting to get a bit restless there. Basically, if they play like two or three more games poorly, people are going to start thinking, oh, basically we need
as
to be careful.
As many as that? Or do you think the next game could even be decided?
I don't know. For Dunga's fate, if Brazil don't beat Chile, it's going to be really hard for him to actually stay.
Where is the game?
It's in Santiago.
Ooh.
Well, we've been beaten there 3-0 a couple of years ago there. So it's hard. Problem is, I don't think they could just draft somebody put in place. The only suitable name, in my opinion, is actually in Chelsea now. So
right.
to get this team again. They're talking about Luxembourg. I don't think he's the right guy to get the team again because... I don't know. There's something about his persona that people don't like in Brazil.
He's a bit shady.
Yeah, he's a bit shady, etc. I don't think his reputation can recover. I'm not saying he's not a good manager. He is. But it seems that Dunga also is fighting too much with the press. Instead of being a bit humble like Klinsmann was in Germany, in terms of like, right, I'm learning as well, Dunga's already fighting. The other day he had a press conference in Beijing and an English guy asked if he was disappointed for losing at the medal. He said, oh yeah, I'm sure that you English people would love to have won more World Cups than Brazil. You know, it's not like that. Perhaps he should be more worried about the team and people's patience is actually running short.
I see, Fernando, that the Brazilian women's team lost the final as well. They were quite unlucky to lose it, but will people in Brazil care about that?
People are heartbroken because there's a huge difference. You see the men, they had this amazing contract with Nike. They are like millionaires. They have amazing infrastructure and they have at least... Even if the Brazilian league is not as strong as it used to be, they have a strong professional league. The women, you know, those girls are heroes. Marta has to play in Sweden, you know, they're all scattered. Some of them are even semi-pro in a certain way. And to actually reach finals as constantly as they have been, it's a feat. It's amazing. So people are heartbroken because they keep missing at the golden opportunities. Twice Olympic runners-up, they lost the World Cup to Germany. Last year, so it is a big issue because people seem to think they're always out there overperforming. They're actually outdoing themselves, and at the last hurdle, something doesn't click. You know,
it's a bit like England, isn't it?
England don't generally get to the last hurdle.
Apart from that,
yeah,
and the overperforming bit. I just meant
and
the
Brazilian women's team have some exceptional players. Marta is something else.
Yeah. There you go, eh? That's our bank holiday installment of Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday, so hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Fernando Duarte.
Always a pleasure.
And you, Richard Aikman, for stepping up to the plate.
Thank you very much, James.
And Barry Glendening for sounding interested at times.
I was interested.
Yeah, there you go. And also producer Ian, many, many thanks. And you, the listener, will be back on Thursday, as I mentioned. Bye for now.
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.